Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Nashville, 11 o'clock.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. So at a time when we need a little encouragement, a little reason to hope, we got one. The successful launch of a very cool mission to another planet. On the other hand, it was a little distressing to see so many people showing up with luggage and hoping to get a lift. We'll ask where it's going and why, plus author Susan Orlean tells us about a real wonder dog, and Carl Castle dismisses all those flattering stories coming out about his anonymous good deeds.
It's probably an infinite number of people who could come forward with a story.
Who we'll ask who really was warning us to expect to hear some more. It's coming up on our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. Iranian state media reports the Iranian military shot down an unmanned U.S. drone in the eastern part of the country. Tehran is calling the alleged violation of its airspace a clear example of aggression. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports from Istanbul.
The official IRNA news agency quoted an unnamed military official as saying a U.S. spy plane had been shot down, adding that the RQ-170 aircraft was only slightly damaged and was in Iranian hands. No further details were provided. The U.S. military does use Lockheed Martin RQ-170 Sentinel drones for surveillance in the region. Iran has said in the past that it's working on producing its own drone aircraft. Other Iranian media quoted officials as warning that Tehran's response to, quote, clear border violations will not be limited to Iran's borders. The officials didn't specify what kind of countermeasures they were referring to. Peter Kenyon, NPR News.
Results from the first round of voting in Egypt's parliamentary elections confirm that Islamist parties captured the majority of the votes. NPR's Lourdes Garcia-Navarro reports from Cairo.
According to the High Electoral Commission, 61% of all the votes cast went to Islamist parties. The Muslim Brotherhood's Freedom and Justice Party took in some 36% of the votes, and the hardline fundamentalist party Noor, which means light, took some 24%. The overwhelming boost for religious parties has left Christians and liberal groups here concerned that the new parliament could be used to push an Islamist agenda. Liberal parties fared badly in this round of the vote, even though those affiliated to them were heavily involved in Egypt's revolution in January and February, when the Hosni Mubarak regime was toppled. It's unlikely they will fare any better in the next two rounds of voting, which take place in rural, conservative areas. Lourdes Garcia-Navarro, NPR News, Cairo.
Russians voted for a new parliament today. The United Russia Party of Prime Minister Vladimir Putin had a two-thirds majority in the outgoing State Duma, but a survey by an independent polling agency shows growing discontent with the party. Republican voters in the U.S. have only about a month until the first votes are cast in the presidential nominating process. They have one fewer choice today with the suspension of the Herman Cain campaign. The Iowa caucuses will be the first test for the remaining candidates. A Des Moines Register poll released last night shows that former Speaker Newt Gingrich in the lead with 25%. Congressman Ron Paul is second with 18%. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney is in third place with 16%. A college football victory turned ugly last night in Oklahoma. People were trampled when fans celebrated Oklahoma State's win over Oklahoma. Emergency official Michael Othema says thousands of spectators ran onto the field even before the final whistle.
About 20 seconds prior to the game officially being over, the fans stormed the field. They jumped over the railings, and unfortunately, we had several injuries.
He says 13 people were hurt, including two people who were critically injured. This is NPR News from Washington. In South Africa, representatives from more than 190 countries are meeting to discuss how to curb greenhouse gas emissions. Hot-button issues include pieces of a treaty that are about to expire. NPR's Richard Harris reports so far there's been little progress.
The first week of talks to develop a new climate agreement involved mostly lower-level negotiators who tweaked language and postured a bit to make way for their superiors. So it's not surprising that there are no accomplishments to speak of as yet. A central controversy here is what will happen to the Kyoto Climate Treaty. Major parts of it expire next year, and there's no consensus about what to do next. Some countries are pressing for immediate action. Others are hoping to lay the groundwork for a new agreement that would take effect after 2020. But the planet is likely to heat up more than the agreed-upon target of 2 degrees Celsius in the absence of strong new actions in this decade. The talks are scheduled to run through Friday. Richard Harris, NPR News, Durban, South Africa.
It snowed in Arizona this weekend. Residents of Flagstaff report as much as a foot of snow, making driving a challenge. But Susan Merkley, the manager of the downtown diner, doesn't seem to mind.
It's very clean and refreshing, and our environment certainly needs it, and any snow is good snow as far as I'm concerned.
Utility officials in California say there are still tens of thousands of people without electricity after powerful windstorms last week. Unusually strong winds began Wednesday, bringing down trees and power lines. More wind is expected to begin tomorrow and persist into Tuesday. In men's tennis, Rafael Nadal of Spain won the Davis Cup in Spain today. He beat Juan Martín del Potro of Argentina 1-6, 6-4, 6-1, 7-6. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Intel Corporation in recognition of NPR's ongoing commitment to science and technology coverage.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, guys. We have got a great show for you today. But first...
Woof, woof.
What's that, Carl? Is there something wrong? Is someone caught in the well?
Woof.
So I just finished Susan Orlean's book on Rin Tin Tin, and I really want a brave, loyal canine companion of my own. Right, boy?
I wonder if it's too late to go back to the newscast.
Down, boy! Down! Well, Susan Orlean will be joining us later, but right now it's the listener's turn. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Brent Morvay from Billings, Montana.
Hey, Brent. What do you do there?
I am a biomed engineer.
Okay. Which involves doing what?
That means I travel around to little hospitals all over Montana and Wyoming and ensure that all the equipment is safe for patients to use.
Really? So, like, you're dealing with, like, this complicated medical equipment, the things with the pumps and the beeps and the...
Yeah, all that kind of crazy stuff.
You know, does that actually do anything? Because I've always wondered whenever I've been in a hospital, like, most of the stuff is just there to make me think that I'm being taken care of.
Well, you know, it's just all those little beeps just go on your bill.
Exactly. Well, welcome to the show, Brent. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a television personality and a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Brent.
Next is one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts is here.
Hi, Brent.
Finally, it's the host of the world-dominating podcast, Too Beautiful to Live, Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hey, Brent.
Hi, Luke.
So, Brent, welcome to the show. You are going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will now read to you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you will win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
I am.
All right, here we go. Here's your first quote. It is a presidential candidate dismissing yet another woman who came forward with accusations of sexual shenanigans.
It's probably an infinite number of people who could come forward with a story.
Apparently it
so,
is.
So which is the candidate who's warning us this won't be over for a while?
I'm thinking it might be Herman Cain.
You think? Yes. It is Herman Cain. Well done. This week we heard from the fifth woman, by our count, who independently decided to make up stories about Herman Cain's sex life. Because, as he explained, they really don't want a businessman in the White House. This one says she had an affair with him for 13 years. Man, you must really hate businessmen to pretend to have sex with one for 13 years.
That's commitment, 13
years. It really
years.
Is, 13 years.
That's, I mean, you know, most marriages don't last that long.
I know. Now, this is what's happened this week. Conservatives backed Cain in the face of multiple credible accusations of sexual harassment. But now they're abandoning him. Apparently, hitting on women is only a sin if it works. So instead, his conservative supporters are turning to Newt Gingrich. Turns out that they're not bothered by adultery. They just want someone who's good at it. They want a president who is ready, who is trained, who is ready to cheat on day one. Because what if that booty call comes at 3 a.m.?
That's right. That's hilarious. Who's going to answer the booty call?
Absolutely.
At 3 a.m. Be prepared.
Yes, this is the president. Why, hello.
I want a president who can multitask, and clearly he can.
That's true. But the best thing about this was the warning that Carl quoted, that there might be an infinite number of these stories. An infinite number?
Yeah. Wow.
Do you know if you put an infinite number of Herman Cain's mistresses in a room with an infinite number of typewriters, they still could not come up with a single reason he should be president?
Herman Cain and all his women. Now, that's a big tent.
That really is. I love the idea of there being an infinite number of mistresses. Why, Herman Cain has more mistresses than there are stars in the sky. For a small fee to our mistress registry, you can have one of them named after your loved one.
I think it's exciting. 1,000 points of one-night stands.
Exactly. Somewhere Wilt Chamberlain is going, damn. All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
The foreign ministry regrets the protest that led to some unacceptable behavior.
Now, that was from the foreign ministry of Iran, apologizing after some Iranians engaged in what, quote, unacceptable behavior this week?
Tearing down the British embassy?
That's exactly what they did. And we can... very good. And we can kind of commiserate with what the Iranians were going through, because here in the United States, we like to relive our glory days, you know. We have rock reunion tours and gigantic cars and prescription Viagra. Well, they get nostalgic in Iran, too. This week, students tried to recreate the magic of their old days of the 70s by storming the British embassy. They played the same songs they had from that period, Death to America, In No Way Free Bird.
Summer of Jihad.
Everybody Must Get Stoned for Adultery. But it's not the same. You know how it is. It's not the same. Now if you want to storm an embassy, Ticketmaster charges a $10 riot fee.
That's why I'm glad that Michelle Bachmann really stood up about this whole thing, right?
Michelle Bachmann, as you know, announced that if she were president, she would then close the U.S. embassy in Iran. Which was closed 30 years ago. You may remember there was a little bit of a kerfuffle about her embassy.
Well, and she's going to do that right after she captures Saddam Hussein and kills Osama bin Laden.
Right, exactly. No, what happened was the candidate, they said, well, what is she talking about? We haven't had an embassy there for decades. And she said, no, she was speaking hypothetically.
Yeah.
She was speaking hypothetically.
No, there is a Quiznos there, though, that has three Americans working in it. So she would pull them out of the Quiznos.
Right. And then she would seize the Iranians' unicorns.
She'd demand that the Soviets tear down that wall.
Absolutely. All right, very good, Brent. Here is your last quote.
It's a extraterrestrial real estate appraisal.
That was a scientist at NASA talking about what new mission that launched this week.
Oh, gosh. A mission to Mars?
Mission to Mars, yes. It's the new Mars rover. NASA has launched a new robot rover, which will arrive on Mars for a mission to find out if that planet ever had the conditions that make life possible, namely liquid water, organic compounds, and a reliable wireless connection.
Wait a second. We're going all the way up there to look around. There's got to be some kind of a Google Map function you can street view. Most of Mars at this point, I assume.
I got to say, I'm a bit of a space geek, and this is so cool. It'll be sent with what they're calling the Sky Crane, right? And this is this enormous flying device that will fly down to the planet, and then it will sort of suspend itself and lower the rover on a cable, it softly under the ground, and then the Sky Crane will fly away and crash far away, right? So it's this thing that's going to travel with it and then make sure it gets there safely and then sacrifice itself. They're sending the rover with its mother. And it's that kind of self-sacrificing mother. It's going to lie there and it's going to say, no, don't worry about me. I'll be fine. I just wanted you to be safe. Have fun roving. Carl, how did Brent do in our quiz?
Peter, Brent had 3 correct answers, so Brent, you win our prize.
Brent, well done.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Peter. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
On that snow, nay, never. No, they never, no more. Will I play a wild rover? No, never, no more.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Luke, you remember Rick Perry? He is still running for president.
That name sounds really familiar.
Yeah, I know.
He was on General Hospital, right?
I think so, yeah.
Right. Yes.
Anyway, he was in New Hampshire this week, and he asked young people of voting age to support him on Election Day, but he managed to make a little error. What did he get wrong?
I think he actually made 2 errors, in fact. One was that he thought the voting age there was 21, which I don't think it is anywhere, right?
Right.
And he also had the wrong day for the vote.
That's exactly right. He got both the voting age and the date of the election wrong. Governor Perry said to a group of college students, quote, those of you that will be 21 by November 12th, I ask for your support and your vote, unquote. The voting age in the United States is 18, not 21, has been for a while, and Election Day next year is November 6th. So he asserted 2 facts in 1 brief sentence, and he got both wrong.
You know, technically speaking, though, he wasn't totally wrong. It just right. You could be 21 on November 12th, and you could vote November 6th.
Yep.
That's
for
true.
Rick Perry.
Absolutely.
Or he mentioned 21 because that's the drinking age, and he knows that to vote for him, you have to be smashed. This is true. People who knew him or know him back in Texas are kind of amazed by how badly he's doing. Even for him, this is really terrible. And there's one theory that is popular in Austin. It was published in Vanity Fair. That people know that he had back surgery, and they're afraid that's messed him up. Just the discomfort in his back, maybe the painkillers he's taken, has put him off his game. In related news, Governor Perry's brain is located in his lower back.
I think it's the hair again. If he and Mitt Romney mussed each other's hair up, they'd both be doing better.
You think so?
They should let Ron Paul comb their hair for him.
That sounds like the worst slumber party ever. We made pizza rolls, we talked about boys,
and Ron Paul combed our hair.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance, with Snapshot, a program in which rates are determined by the driving habits of policyholders. Learn more at progressive.com. Lumber Liquidators, with hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring, a floor finder app, and information online at lumberliquidators.com. And Pimsleur Language Programs, providing tools to learn a listener limerick challenge in 45 languages, online at pimsleur.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
As unrest in Syria builds towards civil war, the U.S. faces difficult choices.
I don't think there's a military solution.
The international community should do something.
There are tremendous limits to what the United States can actually accomplish.
I'm Neil Conan, U.S. Options in Syria, plus Freeman Hrabowski, who took a second-tier state university to a new level. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers.
You know, I'm having all kinds of problems trying to trade in my old car.
Oh, dealer's still insisting that it run, huh?
Exactly. If it ran, I wouldn't have to trade it in.
Well, if your old car won't leave the driveway or won't leave it reliably, donate it to this station through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
You'll help pay for the programs you love, and you'll pocket a tax deduction.
Pretty good, huh? Here's how to do it.
For information on supporting Nashville Public Radio with your vehicle donation, visit our website, WPLN.org.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. It's 19 minutes after 11, 62 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Luke Burbank, and Mo Rocca. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello there.
Hi, who's this?
This is Cliff from St. Joseph, Missouri.
Hey, how are things in St. Joseph?
They're just great.
Now St. Joseph is, I've heard of St. Joseph. Isn't it St. Joseph famous for some reason?
As the Chamber of Commerce likes to say, it's the birthplace of the Pony Express and the end of Jesse James.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Do you have reenactments of, like, those things?
We certainly do.
Do you really? You, like, some actor gets shot in the back by the coward Robert Ford?
Well, more so the Pony Express runs.
Really? Well, welcome to our show. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Cliff's topic?
Ace this course, and you'll be ready for that job on Wall Street.
The Ivy League is seen as the fast track to the 1%, and for good reason. The rigorous education offered at Harvard, Yale, and all the rest prepare our youth to rule us all. Each of our panelists is going to describe a real course at a real Ivy League school that you could take if you were smart enough to get in. Guess the real story, you will win Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
First, let's hear from Roxanne Roberts.
Pity the poor rich kids, or give them a class on how to shop without guilt. This semester, Harvard University offered Psychological Implications of Luxury Consumerism Among 18 to 21-Year-Olds, otherwise known as Shop Op 101. The class requirements are pretty simple. Students keep a diary of all their purchases or gifts valued at $100 or more and record their emotions at the time of purchase and 24 hours later. Quote, privileged students often suffer from anxiety and guilt about their lifestyle, Professor Andrew Hitchcock told the Boston Globe. This class is designed to make them more comfortable with their economic status. But students seem pretty comfortable already. Quote, basically, we spend our parents' money and get credit for it, freshman Stephanie Koulis told the paper. I got an A on my midterm in one afternoon at Neiman's, and I'm already done with my Christmas shopping.
High-end shopping taught at Harvard, your next story of the Ivy League, shaping tomorrow's leaders, comes from Morocco.
You have no idea how clubby the Ivy League can get. As if Yale University kids weren't cool enough already, now juniors are being offered a course entitled Dance, Music, and Nightlife Culture in New York City. That's right, Yaleys are studying clubbing. Topics include the birth of the mega club and getting past the velvet rope. There are even field trips down to New York to go clubbing at the Boom Boom Room. Instructor Madison Moore says the class is, quote, not just about getting drunk. It's also about getting a high, your understanding of why humans like to stay out late. No word of graduate degrees will be offered. A master's under thesis advisor Master P. A PhD in GHB. Maybe even a law degree in spinning records. You know, a JD in DJing. By the way, if you factor in Yale's tuition, the cover for this class is about $3,250.
A course in clubbing, New York style, at Yale University. And your last story of higher learning at the elite institution comes from Luke Burbank.
Cornell students looking to get into Psych 134, Family, Fame, Failure, taught by Professor Dave Ross, had better be ready to wait. Triple F, as it's known, has already a waiting list for next fall's offering. Using the latest breakthroughs in family psychology and TiVo, the class investigates why, when the national divorce rate approaches 50%, the divorce rate among Kardashians appears to hover near 96%. Kim, Courtney, and Khloe face what might seem like unique challenges in terms of interpersonal and family dynamics, Ross says, but with new reality shows being created every day, it's really only a matter of time before every American marriage is being televised nationally, or at least on the Oxygen Network. The class is so popular that Andrew Walsh, a professor in the business school, is considering teaching an economics course next year called New Economies, turning an ample backside and no discernible talent into millions of dollars.
All righty then. Cliff, if you were lucky enough to get into one of these elite exclusive institutions, you could either take a course in luxury shopping at Harvard, that was from Roxanne, a course in clubbing in New York at Yale from Morocco, or a course in the Kardashian marriage dynamics at Cornell University. Which of these is a real course at a real institution of higher learning?
I'm going to go with the Kardashian.
You're going to go with the Kardashian studies?
Yes.
Psychologist trying to determine why the Kardashians have so many marriage troubles at Cornell. That's your choice?
Yes.
All right. Well, we spoke to someone who studied this course and reported on it for the school paper.
It's being called Yale's class on clubbing, but it's actually called dance music and nightlife culture in New York City.
That was Dan Stein. He's a Yale student, a real one, who wrote about the very real clubbing class for the very real Yale Daily News. So I'm afraid, in this particular case, Mo had the real story. Mm-hmm. And all the people who did not go to Yale are regretting that choice right now.
It's so the only way they can get into those clubs.
Apparently. However, you did earn a point for Luke for his excellent course in the Kardashian studies, which I recommend to all students out there. So thank you so much for playing, Cliff.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm gonna teach you how to make it funky, funky. I'm gonna teach you how to say, ooh yeah, ooh yeah. I'm gonna teach you how to make it funky, funky.
And now the game where we ask interesting people about things that do not interest them at all. Susan Orlean is one of the most successful nonfiction authors in America. Her books and New Yorker articles were turned into the movies Blue Crush and Adaptation, in which she herself was played by a naked Meryl Streep. Her latest book, titled Rin Tin Tin, is about, well, I don't want to spoil the surprise. Susan Orlean, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, it's great to be here.
It's great to have you, Susan. It's great to have you. So you wrote this book, The Orchid Thief, that got made into a movie called Adaptation, which, weirdly enough, is not so much about the story of your book, although it includes it. It is about the writer trying to adapt your book, The Orchid Thief. And you are in it, or rather, you are portrayed in it by Meryl Streep.
Right.
Before I get any further, how was that for you?
It's kind of cool.
Well, pretty kooky, as right. You can imagine.
I can imagine. I mean, I often fantasize about being played by Meryl Streep, but it seems unlikely.
Yeah,
and
well,
it happened
don't
to you.
Give up.
All right,
don't
thank you.
It was, I would say, probably as close to an out-of-body experience as anyone could ever imagine.
Right.
I have a question. When Meryl Streep plays you in a movie, does she, like, come over to your house and follow you around the kitchen, like, to try to, like, act like you?
Well, this is terribly embarrassing, but I will tell you what happened. I was very excited when I heard that Meryl Streep was going to play me. So I would come into my office at the New Yorker, and I would just very casually say to my colleagues, oh, could you guys tidy up? I think Meryl Streep might be coming by today just to study me.
Yes.
You know, and then she wouldn't come by, and then another week would roll around, and I'd again say to people, you know, could you kind of clean up in here, guys? I mean, I think Meryl Streep's probably going to come and, you know, study me. Well, then at one point I said to the producer, so look, I mean, is Meryl Streep going to come? And they said, oh, we already shot her scenes. She really just wanted to create the character kind of on her own and didn't want to study you. And then, so I was eating a lot of humble pie at the office.
So let's talk about Rin Tin Tin a little. I want to say that I picked up your book with a sense of heavy obligation, in that I wanted to read the book because you were going to be our guest, but I am totally uninterested in dogs, only had the vaguest idea who Rin Tin Tin was, and ended up just loving it. So, I mean, it's a book for everybody who thinks they hate dogs.
Right, that's right. It's actually a book for dog haters.
Dog haters, exactly. And there's so much in that book I did not know. For example, that Rin Tin Tin was not a character but a real dog.
And that is exactly what drew me into the story, because having grown up at the very tail end of Rin Tin Tin, having been a TV star and knowing him just as a character in television, it completely astonished me to learn that he was a real dog born in 1918.
Right.
And a dog who had had a huge career and a sort of global acclaim in the 1920s.
To summarize very briefly, Rin Tin Tin was found on a battlefield in World War I by a soldier named Lee Duncan, who brought him home to America and got into the movies, and he became one of the biggest movie stars in the world.
In the 1920s, he was probably the top box office earner for many years. He was known all over the world. I mean, in the 20s, when Rin Tin Tin was in a movie, he was the name above the title.
Jeez.
He was the big deal.
Really?
Such a big star that when he died in 1932, the news interrupted broadcasting all over the country.
Yeah. And I love the fact that, as you write, that like the gossip magazines used to write about him like a movie star. Like they say he lived in a hotel suite with his wife, Nanette, right?
Right. Actually, my favorite report was where they presumably interviewed his wife, Nanette, who said she was putting aside her career for the time being because of the demands of motherhood.
Was he fixed?
Definitely not.
Oh, okay, good. So he could enjoy his celebrity.
He really enjoyed his celebrity.
He could run for president now.
If you see one of the silent films, you will know quite immediately that he was not fixed.
Right.
And he had 44 puppies.
Wow!
For the newcomer to this, what are the essential differences between Rin Tin Tin and Lassie?
Oh my God! I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. I'm very sensitive on the subject.
Really? Why?
Well, you know, it's very funny because the rivalry—it's sort of a Rolling Stones Beatles rivalry that it just doesn't go away. I mean, seriously. The essential difference, and it's a real difference, which is there's no story about Lassie. Lassie was a fictional character who became a television character, but there was no story behind it. Rin Tin Tin was a real dog with this amazing life story of having been found on a battlefield, brought back to the U.S., became, through, you know, kind of luck and chance, an actor, a star, and then became a character. So his story was much more complicated.
Yeah. You're Timmy. You're in a well. Who do you call?
Yeah. Well,
that's the question. Hey, I understand that you're quite an animal person at home. You have this. You wrote about this, raising chickens in the New Yorker. You have this sort of farm in upstate New York.
Yeah, we have a lot of critters. We have chickens and turkeys and ducks and cattle and cats. And
wait a minute. You have cattle?
Yeah, they're not house pets.
No, clearly not.
They're living outside.
I understand. Do you have dogs?
I have a dog.
Since researching Rin Tin Tin for 10 years, are you terribly disappointed in your dog?
We have a lot of talks where I kind of say, look, you know, Rin Tin Tin supported his master for years.
Right.
What have you done for me lately?
But he doesn't, like, rescue you from Indians or anything like that.
No, but you know what? I will say, every time I've fallen in a well, she does pull me out.
That's good. Can I say, by the way, and I say this to you as someone who's written a book about a famous performing dog, that I did not get a dog until I was a freshman in high school, 14 years old, say. And by that time, I was so ruined by fictional dogs, ranging from all the movie dogs, the TV dogs, to Snoopy. And then you get a real, finally, after a lifetime, a kid's lifetime of wanting one, you get a dog. And it's just a dog. It doesn't talk to you. It doesn't, like, run errands for you, bring you your... It doesn't even bring my slippers. It just kind of panted and ran around and occasionally would poop outside. That was it!
Right.
But isn't that what marriage is like, too?
Where you poop outside?
Well, Susan Orlean, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Rin Tin Tin is just the begin-gin-ginning.
Uh-oh.
So we were talking about Rin Tin Tin, and somebody said that sounds like the Tin Tin comics, and that sounded like Tauntauns from Star Wars, and we sort of got carried away. So we're going to ask you three questions based on three things that sound like the title of your book.
Oh, good. This is I'm probably guaranteed to flunk all of these.
That's the plan. But if you answer two out of these three questions correctly, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is author Susan Orlean playing for?
Susan is playing for David Gaze of Oak Park, Illinois.
Ready to play?
I am.
All right. Tintin is, of course, a famous Belgian comic book hero, and he's the basis for the new Steven Spielberg movie. His BFF, Captain Haddock, is known for his elaborate curses. Which of these is a genuine Captain Haddock expletive? A, blue, blistering, bell-bottom balderdash. B, filibustering, French-fried frankincense. Or C, hairy hedgehogs on a stick.
Whoa.
Yes.
I'll say number one.
Blue, blistering, bell-bottom balderdash?
Yeah.
You're right.
Ah!
The idea... Captain Haddock is a sailor, and the author Hergé wants him to swear like a sailor, but not actually swears. So that's good. So that was Tintin. Next up, Tauntauns. As all Star Wars fans know, they're the beasts on the ice planet Hoth, famous for that bit where Han Solo cuts one open to make a nice warm hot pocket for the injured Luke Skywalker. What is the latest Tauntaun-themed Star Wars merchandise? A, the Craftsman Star Wars Edition chainsaw, which is, quote, tough enough to open a Tauntaun. B, a sleeping bag that looks like a Tauntaun. You unzip and get to keep yourself warm by climbing in. Or C, a loaf shaped to look like a Tauntaun to be enjoyed on a Star Wars nerd holiday called Life Day.
Ooh, I'm going for B.
You're going to for B, the sleeping bag?
Yeah.
You're right.
Oh, my God.
This is the Tauntaun sleeping bag.
I can't believe it.
Which is great is that this, the Tauntaun-shaped sleeping bag, which you could cut open and then crawl inside yourself, was actually an April Fool's joke on a website called ThinkGeek. But the response to it was so overwhelming that they just actually started manufacturing them. All right, we've had Tintin, Tauntaun. How about TomTom? The GPS system that uses celebrity voices to give directions. Which of these is a real celebrity instruction you can get on your TomTom GPS? Is it A, Snoop Dogg saying, Giza Frieza, put your Kiza in the ignition? B, Kim Kardashian saying, if you turn left at the next light, I'll marry you. Or C, Cormac McCarthy saying, the road is long, hungry, cold, find food or die. Yes, that is the way of it.
Oh, my God. Well, I know which one I would buy, but my guess is that it's number one.
Snoop Dogg?
Yep.
You're right. Very good. Here is a sample of Snoop Dogg helping you find your way.
G's up, freeze up, put your keys up in the ignition and let's turn this thing on.
There you go. You're ready to go. Carl, how did Susan Orlean do in our quiz?
Susan, you had a great game. Three correct answers, so you win for David Gaze.
Well done.
Good.
Bravo.
I am so proud.
You should be.
I really am. I'm really proud.
You know what, Susan? You get a bacon treat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Susan Orlean is the author of the new book, Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend. It's out now. Susan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye, Susan.
Thank you.
He is Private Rin Tin Tin. They are the Army's pride and joy.
In just a minute, Carl heads to the kitchen with Ron Paul in the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Doris Duke Foundation for Islamic Art, seeking to improve Americans' understandings of Muslim arts and cultures. The Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections and celebrating National Adoption Month at AECF.org. And the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at SKOLL.org. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Loving vampires, amoral zombies, righteous serial killers, and lots of God. I'm Krista Tippett. Join me next time with USC media and religion watcher Diane Winston on TV as a place where great writers and actors are telling the story of our time, playfully, violently, soulfully. Monsters We Love. That's the next On Being from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
Bachman, Perry, and Kane have had their days in the sun. Now it's Newt Gingrich topping Republican polls, at least for the moment. I'm Warren Olney. And to the point, he does have experience, but can it survive the scrutiny of evangelical Tea Partiers who don't like lobbyists or multiple marriages? Will he and Mitt Romney debate what governing really means? Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 8 o'clock. Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from WPLN listener members and from Tennessee Department of Agriculture, offering the Taste of Tennessee online store that links to farm, direct, and artisan products like local cheeses and aged hams. The online store is open at picktnproducts.org. Time is 11:40. It's 63 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Luke Burbank, Roxanne Roberts, and Mo Rocca. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you. In just a minute, Carl announces amazing deals on limericks. It's Black Rhyme Day. Yeah, I know. If you'd like to play, give us a call with 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, tired of all the publicity that goes along with being a giant oil company, Canada's Paramount Resources decided to change their name to what?
Paramount Resources to Acme Resources.
No.
This is an oil company.
To the... Is oil in the name of the company anymore?
Not at all.
No. They are the they who should not be named.
No. Well, I'll give you a hint. It's a name people like already, and it does have something to do with cars. And Cars 2.
Pixar?
Yes, Pixar. They changed their name to Pixar. Toy Story, Up, Fracking. These are now all beloved Pixar productions. Paramount Resources... has now called itself Pixar. That might improve its image. It will definitely make its headquarters the future site of Canadian school children's most disappointing field trips.
I thought it would have to be something like Pixar Juice or something like that to keep it different from Pixar, right?
Well, I'm not quite sure how they can get away with this. They might be able to get away with this due to vagaries in international law.
Mm-hmm. Or they could spell it differently. They're going to spell it Pic and then Czar, as in like T-S-A-R.
Yeah.
This Canadian company thinks they're in the clear, but wait until a small cowboy, a spaceman, and a Mr. Potato Head show up to enforce the trademark.
I know, man.
I think they would have been better off if they would have named it after a cute car.
Why not go all the way? I mean, why not call it Victoria's Secret? You know, there are other companies that might have...
right?
Yeah,
why don't they name
company.
It after somebody that people like? Like, call it, like, Tom Hanks Juice.
There's a huge spill of Tom Hanks Juice in the Gulf of Mexico.
Again?
You're right, it doesn't sound so bad. It sounds very pleasant and friendly. Roxanne, Pakistan's telecommunications authority has decided to crack down on indecent texting. They've now put out a list of words you can no longer text to anyone in that country, including intercourse, breast, flatulence, and what other apparently commonly used phrase?
Is it a bodily function?
Technically, no.
I know what it is.
You know what it is. It's not a bodily function. I need a hint.
Well, this is where you'd throw a ball at Curious George for maximum comic effect.
Groin.
Well, yes. Well, close enough. I'm going to give it to you. Monkey crotch. You can no longer text the phrase monkey crotch to your friends in Pakistan. It's against the rules.
Do monkeys have some sort of special kind of crotch?
We don't know.
That I'm unaware of?
Monkey crotch is one of about 1,700 words and phrases that have been banned in the latest move by the government in Karachi, which, by the way, is also banned because it sounds like crotchy.
Right.
We also, in answer to this question, Roxanne, we would have accepted the banned phrases athlete's foot, Glazed Donut and Neon Dion.
What if you're a Pakistani with a relative living in Intercourse, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, it's a problem.
What if you're an actual monkey?
How is Pakistan dealing with the word Lahore?
What do you say?
One of their biggest cities.
Luke, it's award season, and Publishers Weekly has named what it says is the very worst book ever published. Ever. What is it?
Is it fiction?
It's nonfiction. It is a cookbook.
It's a cookbook. It's the worst cookbook. It was the worst book ever written, and it is a cookbook.
Yes.
My mom used to have this cookbook when I was a kid called the I Hate to Cook Book.
Yeah.
Which I don't know when that was written, but that seemed like a terrible. It explained a lot about the cuisine in the Burbank household growing up.
Sure.
It was a cookbook that was maintained and written by the 1980s by the TV character Alf.
No. The Alf cookbook, not really. Modi, do you know what I mean?
No, I thought it was Art of the Deal by Donald Trump.
That's actually a really good guess.
That's a good guess. Yeah. Roxanne, you have any idea what it might be?
1987.
The Aha cookbook.
I'll tell you, it's called Microwave for One.
Wait a second. You said worst because that's the saddest.
Yeah, well, maybe. Every recipe makes enough. It's called Microwave for One, but every recipe makes enough for your cats to have the leftovers. It was published in 1987, and the cover of this book features a middle-aged woman, presumably the author, Sonia Allison, leaning on an enormous 80-0 microwave and with delicious, warm, indescribably sad individual meals laid out on the table in front of it.
How did the publisher read the manuscript with all the tear stains that were on it from when he was typing it?
Now, to be fair, Publishers Weekly didn't actually read the book. They don't have a copy, but they were just going by the Amazon reviews. Here is one quote from Amazon. It used to be that I got home from work, and the only thing I'd want to put in my mouth was the cold barrel of my grandfather's shotgun. Then I discovered Sonia Allison's chicken tetrazzini, and now there are two things. Also according to Amazon, customers who bought Microwave for One also bought Nooses for Dummies, A Beginner's Guide to Hoarding, What to Expect When You've Got Nothing to Expect, and Eat, Pray, Love. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme if you'd like to play on air. Call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. You can also find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast from the producers of Wait Wait, this week in honor of Fahrenheit 451 being published as an ebook for the first time. We teach you how to burn an ebook. That's a little sick, I just want to say. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Ashley, and I'm from a little town just south of Tampa, Florida.
And what do you do there?
I'm a mediator.
A mediator?
Mm-hmm.
That means you contact people from beyond the grave.
That would be exciting.
That
no, I help businesses and people who have conflicts resolve their conflicts.
Really? Are any of them dead?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
But if they want to pay me, I'll do it.
That'd be cool. Well, welcome to the show, Ashley. Carl Castle, of course, is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
I am.
Okay. Here is your first limerick.
In Peru, there's no glaciers in sight, and bare mountaintops do not look right. To make them look colder, we'll color the boulders. We're painting the mountaintops
white.
Absolutely right. Yes, very good. They're painting the mountaintops white. A group of Peruvian environmentalists have figured out a way to solve the problem of melting ice caps in the Andes. They want to climb up to the now bare mountaintops and paint them white. This, they argue, both gives the impression the glaciers are still there and would actually cause the ice to come back because ice is really gullible. Here's your next limerick.
Ron Paul's always known what it took to get all our votes on his hook. He knows we're just itching to peek in his kitchen, so his pamphlets will teach us to...
cook?
Absolutely right, yes. Foodies and amateur chefs everywhere are rejoicing at the arrival of a new campaign pamphlet slash cookbook from celebrated cook, Congressman Ron Paul. The 2012 Paul Family Cookbook features 28 pages of, quote, tasty recipes from the Paul family and friends, unquote. It includes the Paul family's famous, quote, American Dream Burger. That's a recipe that instructs you just to leave raw ground beef on a table, and if the free market wants it cooked, it'll get cooked.
I was going to say, can this cookbook actually have any directions or instructions?
It's just whatever. You want to be free. Yeah. Do whatever you want with it. Eat the eggs with a shell on. It's a free country.
Was this a thing that people were kind of just waiting around for? Like, I love the guy's politics, but I really want to know how he makes moussaka.
Here is your next limerick.
The parent consultant now talks. They're wood, and they come in a box. Make piles or stacks, just please put them back. The parents get trained to use...
Oh, could I hear it again?
The parent consultant now talks. They're wood, and they come in a box. Make piles or stacks, but just please put them back. The parents get trained to use...
Blocks.
Right. According to the New York Times, there is a hot new trend among Manhattan parents learning how to play with wooden blocks. These block workshops are led by a self-described block consultant who encourages parents to sit back and observe their children struggling with, quote, structural challenges. This is all part of a broader trend of basic parenting classes. Other workshops include playing peekaboo and nose-picking 101.
I think this is going to be an Ivy League course.
Oh, absolutely. Carl, how did Ashley do in our quiz?
Well, Ashley had three correct answers, and Ashley, I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Well, thank you.
Well done, Ashley. Thank you so much for playing.
Thanks.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Luke Burbank has the lead, Peter. He has 3 points. Roxanne Roberts and Mo Rocca are tied for second. Each has 2.
Well, we have flipped a coin, and Roxanne is elected to go second, so Mo, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. On Tuesday, American Airlines announced that it was blanking.
Filing for bankruptcy.
Right. Violence erupted at a California Walmart on Black Friday when a woman blanked rival customers.
Pepper spray.
Right. After the Federal Trade Commission complained that it deceived users by failing to protect privacy as promised, blank agreed to a settlement.
Google.
Facebook.
Oh,
on Thursday, President Obama and his family officially lit the national blank.
Christmas tree.
Right. A duck hunter in Utah was treated for minor injuries after his dog blanked.
Bit him.
No, after the dog shot him in the butt with his own shotgun.
Okay.
After 32 years in office, Massachusetts Congressman Blank announced he would be retiring.
Barney Frank.
Right. 3 decades after he tried to assassinate President Ronald Reagan, lawyers for Blank argued that he is not dangerous and should be released.
John Hinckley.
Yes. Police were forced to remove a woman from a symphony performance in Washington State after she blanked.
Passed gas really loudly?
No.
Sorry, that's gross. But I mean,
after she shouted, boring, at the performers. So the woman apparently did not care for the symphony's interpretation of the music, even or especially because her own daughter was a musician in the symphony.
That's hilarious.
What were they playing?
I can actually tell you because this happened in my parents' hometown.
Did it really? What happened?
Yeah. Well, one of the pieces they were playing was from Carmen, the dun-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like that.
Yeah. That's
that
not
one.
Boring.
I know, right? So the lady was both rude and not musically accurate.
Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Mo has the lead.
Well done, Mo. Yeah, that was good. All right, Roxanne, you're up next. Please fill in the blank. This week, Hillary Clinton became the first senior U.S. official to visit blank in over 50 years.
Burma.
Right. In a surprise move, the Manchester Union Leader newspaper endorsed Republican candidate blank last weekend.
Gingrich.
Right. When the patent protection expired on Wednesday, the FDA approved a generic version of the cholesterol-lowering drug, blank.
Oh, list, I don't know how to say it, not Lysistrata.
No.
Lepitor. No.
Lepitor, yes. Lepitor,
all right.
Lysistrata would have a very different effect. A club in Arizona is offering kids the chance to pose for a picture with Santa Claus and his blanks.
Guns.
Machine guns, yes. Yeah. This week, NBA player Chris Humphries filed to have his 72-day marriage to blank annulled.
To Kim Kardashian.
Yes, on Thursday, Kanye West, Adele, and Bruno Mars received the most nominations for this year's Blank Awards.
Grammys.
Right, Pope Benedict is being sued for blanking in Germany.
Not wearing a seatbelt.
Exactly right. In the Pope-mobile, the complaint states that Pope Benedict XVI has repeatedly flouted German seatbelt laws, traveling for hours in his Pope-mobile without buckling up. Officials are likely to go easy on him, even though he has so far failed to deliver a promised character reference from God. Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had 7 correct answers for 14 points. Roxanne has taken the lead.
All right, so Carl, how many then does Luke need to win?
7 correct answers.
All right, Luke. Here we go. Roxanne did it. You can do it. Here we go. Late on Tuesday, Vice President Joe Biden made a surprise visit to troops and officials in blank.
Afghanistan.
No, actually Iraq. Speaking on Thursday, President Obama announced $50 million in new federal funding to help eliminate blank.
Afghanistan.
We're halfway there on that one. AIDS. AIDS is the answer. HIV/AIDS. After his staff demanded an apology from a teenage girl in Kansas who criticized him on Twitter, blank himself apologized to her.
Sam Brownback.
Right. After it failed to comply with demands, the Arab League imposed sanctions against blank.
Syria.
Right. Officials in Portland, Oregon say they have no idea what caused a woman's blank to explode, blowing out a window. Yes, and causing $15,000 in damages. This week, a judge in California gave the maximum 4-year sentence to Dr. Conrad Murray for his part in the death of blank.
Michael Jackson.
Yes. This week, it was announced that Sophia and Aiden are the most popular blanks of 2011.
Baby names.
Right. Arrested on drug charges. Colorado Sheriff Patrick J. Sullivan will ironically be sent to the jail that is blank.
Named for him.
Named after him. Yes. When local officials named the local jail the Patrick J. Sullivan Jr. Detention Facility, they did not realize they were actually describing its future use. Carl, did Luke do well enough to win?
He needed 7 correct answers, Peter, but he had just 6 correct answers. So with 16 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
Well done. Congratulations. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what surprising discovery will be made by the rover Curiosity on Mars. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, with reviews on local contractors and doctors in 500 categories with ratings based only on member feedback. Angie'sList.com. Esurance, an Allstate company, offering mobile apps and 24/7 help online or over the phone. Learn more at esurance.com. And Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Goedeke writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Jessica McCloud. Our intern is Hannah Withers. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. B.J. Liederman composed our theme. Our show is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer, wait, wait, don't tell me, is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will the Curiosity rover discover on Mars? Luke Burbank.
The one woman who doesn't claim she slept with Herman Cain.
Roxanne Roberts.
We'll finally find out where all those unmatched socks go, but not how they got there.
And Mo Rocca.
The eventual Republican nominee.
Well, if the Mars rover discovers any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Luke Burbank, Roxanne Roberts, Mo Rocca. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagan. We'll see you next week. Is NPR.
And this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. Make a year-end pledge of support to WPLN this week, and you'll have a chance to win a $2,000 shopping spree to the mall at Green Hills. Our winter e-pledge drawing will be held this Friday morning at 10 o'clock. You can make your contribution and enter the drawing now at WPLN.org.
Next time on The World, nations gather again to talk about climate change.
We meet here at a time when greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere have never been higher.
To hammer out deals.
You need to reassure each other that you are all committed to finding concrete solutions.
So how are we doing? Climate change all this week on The World.
Weeknights at 9 o'clock. The time is 12 noon, 60.